This show is a proud member of the Nerdy Legion Podcast Network. Get more at nerdylegion.com. Enjoy the show!
Spoiler alert! What Did You Watch This Week is a candid discussion about recent movies and TV shows, and it may contain spoilers if you haven't watched them yet. Listen at your own risk.
Episode number 351 of What Did You Watch This Week? My name is Mike.
My name is John. You got it.
I know, after last week's kerfluffle.
After last week's like back and forth kerfluffle. Yeah. Do you realize that this is 3 cubic baker's dozens?
I was not aware.
Because it's 27 times 13 makes 351. So
that is absolutely outstanding.
3 cubic baker's dozens.
There it is.
Oomp, there it is. Thereth it iseth.
Well, like so I said before you. Well, okay, fair enough. See, like I said before you hit the record button, I was a little sick over the weekend. But I did get a couple movies in with the kids while they were here, and I did watch one new show, started it.
Nice.
And, I mean, I guess technically two if I say Ted Lasso.
Well, you had seen episodes of Ted Lasso, so it's yes, not a brand new show.
Now I'm all caught up on season 3. I've watched all 4 episodes.
Outstanding.
Yeah. Now, it's just a very good show.
Now, I had been rewatching it with Julia.
Okay.
So we, you know, I got the refresher on it and the reminders of everything. You went into this like you haven't watched it since season 2 aired.
Mm-hmm.
Did you find that it was jarring to catch up or were you? No.
No.
Good.
No, it just seemed to roll right in. You know, we pick up with Nate being the. I don't even know how to describe him as a character, quite frankly, because he is very, on one hand, he has absolutely zero confidence.
Yep.
On the other hand, he can display all kinds of maybe it's false confidence.
Mm.
It's really hard to describe as a character because it just seems unrealistic.
It is a weird dynamic that he has going on, and they really tried to highlight that 4th episode where he goes back to that restaurant and tries flirting with the hostess again. And you know, now he is the, you know, he's West Ham's manager, and everybody knows him, so he's got that command and that authority, and he has that car, and so, but he's still, like you said, he's still got no confidence when it comes down to it. So he still fumbled. And even when the manager of the store was like, you know, oh, my God, I know you. He still struggled with, like, trying to live up to that height of himself.
He wants to be a big shot, but doesn't know how to be a big shot.
Yep.
Like, he wants to be somebody who is well-respected and loved and the people praise and he's popular and on and on and on, but he doesn't know how to be that person even when that praise comes to him.
Yeah, he it's like he really feels he's owed it all. Like, he looks at the people around him and is like, why can't they just see how amazing I am? But then he can't even see it about himself until those rare times when he like just gets so wrapped up in himself that he like looks at himself in the mirror and spits on himself. And then suddenly he's got confidence again.
Yeah.
I thought it was like, interesting on my rewatch. I had missed the fact the first time that they said something about like fears, And he kind of like, it was just a throwaway line kind of off the cuff. He said that he's afraid of aging. And then all through season two, you watch his hair get progressively grayer and grayer until now it's just like all gray. Like he has prematurely aged.
Oh yeah, tremendously. And even when he is out even when he's out with his team and he's coaching them or whatever, running them through drills or whatever, he just belittles everyone.
Yeah.
Like he rules with fear and just belittles everyone all the time because he was kind of belittled quite a bit when he was the towel boy, if you will. But he just belittles everyone all the time and makes them feel like shit and rules by fear. Mm-hmm. And yet whenever Rupert or anyone else gets around him, he becomes that timid little Nate again.
Yeah.
You know, and Ted Ted trying to even be friendly in that episode 4 and shake his hand and this and that, and Nate just wants to avoid him like the plague.
Mm-hmm.
It's fitting because the plague really hit the UK hard. Anyway, so
yes. I think it's very interesting in that respect because it reminds me of the prison experiment, you know, the famous psychological prison experiment where they took college kids and they said, you are the wardens, you are the prisoners. And the kids that were the wardens, they were brutal. They were mean because they had the power over these people. And so you see that with Nate, like he has the authority over these people.
He has the title, the Reckon title.
Yep. But anybody who is above him, he just immediately cowers because it's all false. It's all just, I can do this because I used to see managers like this all the time. They'd be like, I'm your boss, so I could do that.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm the manager, so what I say goes. Not necessarily.
Nope. No. A true leader, you know, leads by example, leads by inspiration, leads by positive affirmation. You know, yes, Nate is absolutely getting results. He is 100%. That team is crushing it. They probably will be number one the entire season. But none of them are going to respect him. None of them are going to care about him. None of them are going to comfort him if he gets sad or anything like that. He's alone out there. And
I liked how the team found the ripped up Believe sign.
Mm-hmm.
And they found the videotape because the reporter there found it. Not anymore. And Ted didn't want to show the team, but Roy and Beard went ahead and showed the team and the team got angry. And I liked how they just beat everybody up on the pitch instead of actually playing.
Yep.
And then when the game is over and Ted goes out back and Beard and Roy are sitting there, Roy's just like, we fucked up.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, it'd be good if
you overcorrected a little bit.
You overcorrected. Yeah. He goes, it'd be great if you could yell at us right now. He doesn't say anything. Come on, just yell at us.
Yeah.
You can hit us if you want. Please do. You know, and he's just like, keep your chins up, boys. Still plenty of football left in the season. We'll get him next time. But if you go and give me that thumb drive, that'd be great. And he takes it, walks away, and goes, what a fucking asshole. You know, like.
I was telling Julia, I find it very interesting. So, like, the whole premise in season one was, you know, it was the fish out of water. We had the guy who was, but it was, you really believed that this was all about just this overwhelming infectious positivity, like nothing gets this guy down, everything is good. And then starting with season two especially, you start seeing more of the cracks. You start seeing him have his anxiety attacks. You're like, it's easy to chalk it up to like, well, he's getting a divorce and his wife and son are all the way away and he's still the fish out of water and the pressure's getting to him. But this season we're really seeing that what it is the whole thing is a lesson in toxic positivity, in holding your stuff in and saying, I'm only going to see the good and I'm only going to, you know, be positive and I'm just going to look for the light and everything and not let the, you know, not vent, not let it out, not scream and holler. You know, Ted's really up against it now. Sassy, you know, the two of them have hooked up how many times now?
So,
and And he's like, I want to be in a relationship. She's like, no, you're a fucking mess. And I'm a mess too, but I'm further along in my messhood. And, you know, you need to fix your shit. Everybody is kind of looking at him and saying, yeah, it's nice that you're positive and you say believe, but you know, you're not expressing that to the right people. Like the fact that his couple's therapist, his wife was going to a therapist, and then she said, we should go to him as a couple's therapist. First off, that's wrong. That should never happen ever, ever. The therapist should have said no. He should have said, you know, that's a conflict of interest. You should go to an indifferent person who can see the two of you as a couple rather than the established relationship that we have. That's a clear moral. The therapist never should have done that. It is absolutely wrong. Then the fact that this guy used all of that and is now dating his client. I mean, he should be fired. He should have his license taken away.
I know Ted even gave him the out and said, well, it was 18 months ago, but even then, still, mm-hmm. you know, he knows still. Some stuff that he shouldn't know.
Exactly. But the fact that Ted is still holding it in is what is wrong. Like no matter how much you want to be positive, no matter how much you want to have a happy outlook on life and try to look for the good in people, you still need to let some of that shit out. You still need to say, you know what, this isn't right. Yeah. And that is really not right. So I'm glad that he said something to his wife in this most recent episode.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Well, that was what was good at the end. He's like, maybe I shouldn't say, you know, maybe it's not my place to say this, but I feel I should say this. And I think that was good.
Yep.
The season seems to be going by very fast.
Yeah.
Like episode 3, I think it was, they had played no games to now they've played 11 in episode 3. I don't know how long the season is. Football season is.
Oh.
But it seems like they're going to wrap up the football season before they wrap up the end of the show.
It does seem that way. They've always managed to pull it off well in the past two seasons. So I imagine they have a plan. But yeah, I felt the same way. Like, we got a montage in episode 3 of them just like winning after winning after winning.
Well, and what's funny is that they were losing. We didn't see the losses. We just saw the wins, but you'd see the records, and they were losing matches.
Yep.
Or tying matches, you know. Yep. Maybe there's more than that, but no, it definitely did roll by fast. So what was the guy from the Independent? What's his name?
Trent Krim.
Trent. He's there to write a book about the team that season. And Roy's against him at first, and I'm glad they resolved that quickly.
But it was a good I love that Roy had that article in his wallet and read it out loud to him. That was so good.
Yeah, he's like, I was 18 years old. This messed me up, blah, blah, blah. So they reconcile. It was funny because everyone was afraid to talk in front of him because they were afraid of Roy, and then he finally was like, you can talk in front of him. They're like, good, blah, 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 blah. I did like that. We had a couple matches, and then Zava joined the team. Zava joined the team, and he annoys me a little bit, but
so. Remember when the first and second episode, and I was like, I'm so worried about what they're doing this season. It was him. I thought that we were going to spend the entire season focusing on his eccentricities and his craziness. Like, he was going to come out there and it was going to be the whole team versus him, you know, and they were going to be like, oh, I fucking hate that he's stealing this and he's doing that. The team actually seems to love him.
Because they're winning.
Yeah. He's weird, but in a different way. I didn't expect the spiritual side. I thought he was going to be a diva. I thought they were bringing on this guy who was just a fucking diva who's like, I'm better than everybody else. And I was not having any of that. So then when they changed it up and they're like, yeah, he's still fucking crazy, but it's like a spiritual guru. Like when he says, I want to talk to the most important person on the team, the towel, the kit boy. Will steps out and he's like, you are the reason that I play this game. And it just blew Will's mind, but I think that would have been interesting for Nate to see.
Yep.
Considering Nate started off as the Kit Boy. Yeah.
We got Roy and all I can think of is Sassy. It's not Sassy.
Keely.
Keely. Jeez and Crow. I had it earlier. Anyways, Roy and Keely, he breaks up with her because I guess he feels that she's going to greater and bigger things and he's just going to weigh her down. So yep. He's doing that self-sacrificing thing. So they'll get back together probably.
Probably.
I like how Roy's niece seems to live with him practically. Like he's always watching her when it's convenient, you know?
Yep. Yep.
All right, Uncle Roy, I finished my ice cream before dinner, so obviously you have something important to tell me.
Yep. And she also gets to give that logical, you know, they're like, we're breaking up. And she's like, why?
Yeah.
Why? You seem happy, you know?
I don't like Keely's new friend / co-worker, whatever, that she hired, Shandi or Chandra or whoever. I don't like her at all. She's going to be trouble.
Yep.
She already has with her app, want to bang a celebrity.
Yeah. I think the lesson that we're seeing here, because a lot of this show is just, it's lessons.
It really is a good person. Yeah.
This one is you need to really be careful about working with friends. You know, there's always exceptions to the rule. You and I, we've worked together on multiple jobs, never had a problem. Actually worked better together because of our existing relationship.
Yep.
I have hired far too many people when I was managing stores that were friends because I was like, yeah, sure. And then
it didn't work out.
Fucking regretted it.
Yep. I get that.
Keely's learning that. Keely's also learning that being a boss bitch like Rebecca, you know, they always had their like little lunch dates and stuff like that. But there's a lot more work to it. There's a lot more responsibility to it than just, you know, coasting through. So you got the woman there who's handling all of her finances and basically telling her over and over again, no, you can't do this. No.
Yeah.
No, you're spending money that you're not supposed to spend. Be responsible. So she's having to grow up a bit because up until this point she was a fashion model and you know, she got paid to dress up in costumes and pretend to be a lion, advertise products, and now she has to actually make real calls and do real business and balance budgets,
which she is good at doing the majority of that.
Yep. But Shandi should never have come in.
No, God, no. I think that'll come to an end soon.
I hope so.
But yeah, I mean, I've always loved the show and I'm back into it and I'm really digging it and it's good stuff.
Awesome. Yeah, I'm going to be sad to see it go, but I'm glad that they got three seasons and that they said, you know how we're ending it.
Well, it's like the, that Star Wars Celebration, all that news came out, which I'm sure we'll get into later, but reading the article about like, Andor season two. And, you know, they talked, you had the director there, the directors, creators, whatever you want to call them, the writing staff talking like, hey, you know, it's really exciting for us to know that we only have two seasons because we have a definitive finite end to our story.
Yep.
You know, unlike a story that just can go on and on and on and you're trying to figure out what your next direction is. No, we know where ours is. Mm-hmm. It's a movie that was already made and we're just getting to that movie.
Yes. That's one thing that always bothered me about the Dark Tower books by Stephen King. I remember when I was younger reading an article where they quoted him as saying that if he had a library that had like 1,000 shelves and room for 10,000 books or something like that, it still wouldn't cover the entire story he wanted to tell with the Dark Tower series. To me, that's ridiculous. Like in your lifetime, you're not going to write all those books. So cut it out.
Right.
Write yourself an ending. If you want to do more books beyond that, okay. But write yourself an ending and keep things contained. Can you tell that story in 5 books? You know, Harry Potter tells it in 7 books. Can you tell that story in 7 books? Great. Can you tell it in 5 books? Great. Then write those 5, write those 7, and be done with it. Don't say, I've got a plan for 10,000 books. Look at what's happening with George R. R. Martin right now. Is he ever going to finish that other fucking book?
Probably not. Not at this rate.
No, which we'll get to it, but that's what I loved about watching the season finale of Quantum Leap. Are you caught up?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, so. I mean, and honestly, like, we can just jump right to the finale if you want, because, like, each story, like, the last few episodes, like...
they were all basically one long episode?
Well, kind of, yeah. I mean, like, all right, so, you know, we have Martinez, you know, we have where Ben meets Martinez, if you will, and they become friendly because he needs Martinez to help him finish the thing so he can do the leap, and then Martinez, you know, sticks a needle in his neck. And abandons him. Scalpel, yeah, tries to kill him. I said needle, I realized, but he tries to kill him, basically. Yep. But Ben leaps and doesn't die. Then you have
because you had Janice, who basically said that Ben had calculated that he had three opportunities to stop Martinez, and this was the last one. She didn't explain more than that, but she said this was the last time that he was going to be able to stop Martinez before dun-dun-dun.
Exactly. This is the other thing, too. Like, this all is coming out with Janice, especially in the final episode, that these leaps, you know, in the original Quantum Leap series, the leaps were unquantifiable, if you will.
Right.
They have no idea where he was going to leap, how many leaps he was going to have, what was going to happen. They couldn't factor that.
Right. I think his original leap, he had a target. I think didn't he want to go back to see his brother?
Yes, he had a target, but it didn't, he couldn't, but then after that, he didn't.
It was just random. Yeah.
He didn't hit his target.
Yep.
And everything was random. And in this one, then the second to final episode is them on the airplane with the hijackers and this and that. It really was a story of the week episode, and it have kind of, it didn't build on the finale.
But it kind of did, because they had to shut Ziggy down because they realized in the episode before that, quote unquote, Ziggy was the mole.
So they had to work without Ziggy. Okay, that's true.
And basically try to figure out how it was. Essentially, they came to the realization that the Ziggy that they're using now is the same one that's in the future.
Right.
That's directing Martinez. So they had to scrub it and basically keep them from tacking on and knowing where they were going, what they were doing.
Right. And it's not like the Ziggy in the future knew what was happening as far as how Ziggy, the computer, was being used. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah. The whole point, though, of this next to the last episode was to get us to that final scene with the nuclear fallout and Ian in the future, like, and leave us on that cliffhanger, which you're a dick because you watched them all at once. So you got to skip the cliffhanger that I had to live with for a week. No regret, no remorse.
Don't know what to tell you on that. No, I have none. So yeah. So in the season finale, Ben leaps to the future, to 2051, where it's snowing in LA because they've got nuclear winter, and the government decided that Quantum Leap was ruining society, the downfall of society somehow, and Ziggy's been destroyed, and the world's nuked each other. And Ian is alive, and he spent 10 years working on a code that he needs Ben to bring back to him, his younger Ian, and just show him the code and he'll understand it. Well, I didn't have a problem with that.
Okay.
I had a problem with the fact that 2018 Ian and 2022 Ian or 23 Ian and 2051 Ian all seemed to, like, Jedi mind meld together for a moment, because they were all as one and were able to, because they had to hit the code at the same time for Ben's Groundhog Day to work.
Yep.
Because that's what it was. They basically put him in a groundhog loop so he could fix
white. They put him back to the beginning of the leap so that he could.
Yep. Right. And
so for me, I didn't have a problem with that, because the whole theory of Quantum Leap from the original show, you know, the first line of the intro was theorizing that one could time travel within one's own lifetime. Dr. Samuel Beckett stepped into the Quantum Leap Accelerator and vanished. And when they would explain it to people, he would take a big long string and he'd say, you know, this is your life. And then he would coil it up and he'd be like, you know, these points touch each other. You know, instead of looking at it like a big long string, a line.
No,
if you coil it up, if you bundle it up, then all of these points touch each other. So that's the theory of quantum entanglement, is that, you know, you and I have touched each other. So on a quantum level, you and I are connected forever. Like, our cells have exchanged positions with each other. So I was okay with that. Yes, it was a little cheesy. It was absolutely cheesy. But I was okay with the science behind it, because that's what this whole show, the whole experiment, has been based on since Sam Beckett. They didn't introduce anything new from, you know, this show, where they're like, suddenly we've determined that, you know, that the fact that Ben was in the future and everybody was freaking out and the machine was trying to pull him back, because, again, he's not supposed to be in the future, especially if he's not there.
Right.
Like, this is supposed to be within your lifetime. So he's not supposed to be able to be there.
Right. That makes sense. So he leaps back to 2018 in his own body, and it's like the start of Quantum Leap, basically, of this round. And him and Addison are going on their first date, and he's supposed to do everything exactly the same. But of course he doesn't. And then she believes him but doesn't believe him. And he tells Addison the truth and blah, da, 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 da. And then Martinez leaps into magic.
Yeah. Really fucked him over there, didn't he? Wasn't just some random dude on the street. He left
in a magic. It was magic. But it gets caught in a lie by Addison because of the cigars, because Magic was going to go see Al. Deb and everyone starts to believe Ben because he puts the turtle time password writes it on the wall. I mean, like, so he works it out, and essentially him and Martinez get to the fisticuffing, and they end up getting into the accelerator that he's trying to overload to destroy Ziggy in 2018, because Martinez has determined that it's not just Addison that needs to die, because whenever he does it, when they killed Addison, then someone else made it work. They all need to die. Mm-hmm. That's how to stop this. You know, Addison, Ben, and Magic, and Deb, and Ian, they all need to die, not just one of them.
Yeah.
So they commenced to fighting. I thought it was kind of neat how they were leaping into the different people he'd leapt into.
That each one came with different consequences. You know, when he was in the asylum, Martinez had the upper hand because he was like, hey, restrain this guy. And he's like, fuck. You know, because he was just a inmate there or a patient. But then when they leapt into the ship, he outranked him. So it was like, restrain that man.
Ben outranked Martinez, but Martinez beat everybody up anyways. And they commenced to fight and still. And
it's like, you are the Terminator.
Did you find Ben's death sort of unsatisfying? Not Ben, Martinez's death sort of unsatisfying, because We jump into the Old West again, and Ben's back to being the old man, and Martinez is whoever he is, and they're fighting on this balcony, and then Martinez does his evil, I'm going to tell you my speech before I kill you, and then he gets shot and killed from behind by one of the townsfolks.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the end of Martinez. I mean, that was almost kind of not depressing, but...
anticlimactic?
Yeah. And then,
I mean, they got a nice, like you said, a nice montage of fighting through the ages. But yeah, to just be like plugged in the back and then that's it. You're done.
And then Ben leaps into 2018 Ben again. Right.
Yes, because they were able to install the cheat code.
Yep. And he straight up kisses Addison. So that works for him.
Yep.
Then we get like the team in 2023 doing like their, that was the previous episode, right? Yes, that was the previous episode, the plane crash. I'm like, oh, this is what happened to everybody. And she makes a good point of like, we never tell Ben what happens to everybody. And maybe he doesn't remember what happens to them. But essentially, Ben's going to leap back. And someone, it appears that someone's in the Quantum Leap Accelerator. But Addison's face doesn't seem like she's very happy. And so help me God, if they bring us in season two and it's Dr. Sam Beckett.
I'm wondering. So this is what I was referencing when we started this, is I love how they did this, because Julia was in the room at the time when this was up on the screen. I was like, I got to finish this. Like, this is the culmination. And they didn't know if they were getting a second season.
Yeah.
So that ending was a perfect series finale because it could have gone either way. Like, yeah. Her face dropped for a second, and you don't know if it was like that. Like, I'm sure you've experienced that, where you're so excited, and then you just get that overwhelming,
yep.
So it could have been that, or it could have been that somebody else was there, or he didn't arrive, nobody showed up. But it was ambiguous enough that they could have a second season, but it was also final enough that I would have been okay if that had been the series finale. Like, they wrote this saying, we don't know if we're getting another season. Let's leave it on a cliffhanger, but not a cliffhanger.
Yeah.
That would have been a good ending for people to speculate and to be like, you know, I think this is what happened. I think this is what happened, and let it be lost to the ages or whatever. I really liked the way that they did that myself.
I mean, I'm 100% okay with that. What I'm saying, though, is this kind of a dick move was the – not a dick move. Sorry. Let me rephrase that. I'm 100% okay with that. I'm just – I'm hoping it's Sam Beckett. Like, that's what I'm going to – that's what I'm going to hang my hat on. That's what I'm going to run with. That's what my hope and dream is.
Yep.
Is that
– because then it would be so much cooler if he shows up and then he's helping them to kind of –
Right. And everyone he knows is gone, and he's maybe going to know who Magic is. Maybe he won't.
He might know who Al's daughter is.
Maybe, maybe not. Who knows? You're right. I don't know. Yep. But either way, I'm just – that would be so tremendously amazing.
Yeah, I agree.
But we'll see what happens.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Again, this show, I was excited for it, but I had low expectations because I thought that they were going to ruin it. At every turn, they surprised and impressed me. Like, every time I turned around, these guys were like, bam, we're on it. We know what you want. We're yep. going to explain things that have been questions for people. We're going to talk about the science without beating you over the head with it. Like, this was a truly great, it wasn't even a reboot. It was an extension of the original show. And
yes,
I loved it. I'm so happy. I'm glad that we're getting another season. I hope that they keep up the way that they're going with it. And yeah.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see what happens next season. What else you got for shows that you watched?
Doctor Who, we're almost done with Capaldi. I can't remember if I talked about it last time, but we did The Lie of the Land. Now we're into the two off, you know, Monster of the Week episodes, because The Lie of the Land was the end of a four-part miniseries, basically. Mm-hmm. So we did The Empress of Mars, which was, you know, the British Royal Army on Mars because of the yes. One Ice Warrior.
Yep, I remember that.
And then last night we just did The Eaters of Light, which was the one about the 9th Roman Legion that disappeared and the Picts and how there was that creature that could eat sunlight, melting people into piles of goo. So we've only got basically two episodes left this season and then one holiday episode, and then it's on to Whittaker. So we're catching up quickly. I don't know if we're going to take a little pause there when we get to Whittaker and go back to Mr. Robot, or if we're going to stick with this, but for now, I think we're pushing forward to the end of Capaldi to, you know, be like, okay, home stretch. We watched a few more episodes of the second season of Only Murders in the Building.
Okay.
Still a highly entertaining show, fun to watch. I still recommend it for anybody that likes Steve Martin, Martin Short, true crime podcasts. we're all caught up on Love is Blind. They left us on a cliffhanger at the altar of Kwame and what's her name? I want to say Charlotte. Might be. Anyway, we were left on a cliffhanger of whether or not he's going to say yes. Chelsea. That's what it is. Kwame and Chelsea. And then we've got one more episode coming out that's going to be next week on the 17th, I think. And it will be all the weddings. And then a couple days later, they do the live reunion because all this stuff was filmed like last summer and it gets released now. And then they do a live reunion that's like, oh, 2 days ago you watched the finale, but that was actually filmed like a year ago. So here's everybody and we're going to see where they're at now, if they're still together, if they're not together, that kind of stuff. Those are always fun.
Yep.
And other than that, I wanted to ask you, that's all the shows that I've got other than the ones that we watched together, basically Picard and Mandalorian. Last week when we were talking, I remember you distinctly saying, you know, you were talking about like the shows that we watched and you said Ghost, but did we actually talk about it? Alberta's Descendant?
I don't recall. I don't think we did.
I think that we said we watched it, but because I think that was the finale, right? The season finale?
It might have been. It was episode 18. But essentially, Alberta's great niece shows up and wants to know more about Alberta because, you know, it's her great niece and everything. And so they decide to invite over, you know, the Alberta admirer. Jeez, I'm crow so bad. So he comes over and she kind of starts to fall in love with him and thinks she's cute and everything. And then it's funny because, you know, Sam always edits the crazy out of the podcast.
Mm-hmm.
So he seems normal to everybody on the podcast. So once she reveals some of his craziness, she's kind of turned off a little bit, which just makes sense.
And what was her reasoning for that? She was cod blocking.
Yep. But she wants to give up her job as a lawyer to get into singing like Alberta did. And of course, Alberta and everyone's against it until she sings on the podcast and she's mm-hmm. amazing. And then it was kind of a really cool moment where Alberta and her sang together.
Yeah.
That was really cool. But yeah, I thought what I liked the most, though, is that we have this backstory of Alberta's death and they kind of keep going back to it, but like on the low mm-hmm. down.
Yeah.
And then it's just they kind of basically imply that maybe Alberta's sister was responsible for her death because
yeah.
she ended up marrying her man, Alberta's man.
Mm-hmm. And so, her full name is like Teresa or something like that. Like they call her Reese, but, you know, her name is Teresa and T was the one in the journal that was, yeah, I love that. I looked it up and no, that was not the finale. This week on the 13th, we have an episode called Ghost Father of the Bride, where apparently Pete's daughter is getting married. So he tries to convince Sam to have the wedding at Woodstone so that he can be involved in it. And then after that, on the 27th, we have Woodstone's Hottest Couple. On May 4th, we have Whodunit. And then May 11th is episode 22, the season finale. And it's just called episode 22 right now. So, yeah, we've still got another four episodes.
Okay, good. I'm happy with that. I'm happy to have more episodes.
Yep, I am too. What about you? What shows did you watch that I don't normally watch?
Well, they weren't really on. Like, I don't think Alaska Daily was on. Connors wasn't on. Kate and I watch American Idol, and we dig the show. We watched last night's episode today before we started recording. They're trying to whittle down to the top 24.
That seems like they should be whittling further.
Oh, well, they go to 24 to the live episodes, and then America gets to vote from there.
Oh.
I don't vote. But anyways, and then tonight, Monday, the 10th, will be the last top. We'll get to the they'll actually announce the top 24. They'll finish whittling those down. This is really probably the best season of singers we've had on the show.
Yeah. Nice. Have you been watching it from the beginning, though? Because, I mean, yes, Kelly Clarkson.
Since Kate Carrie and I have been watching it these last several years,
okay,
this is probably the best talent of singers. And it was weird because I don't ever remember American Idol being a place where people sang original songs. It was American Idol to me was we're going to find the next pop star. And now American Idol is more like we're going to find the next great singer, regardless of genre.
Mm-hmm.
And the last couple few years, especially, there's a lot of people singing original songs that are really, really good, opposed to just doing covers all the time.
Nice.
Yeah. So now, granted, when they get to the certain rounds, they have to do certain songs to kind of keep the, you know, a level playing field. But it definitely seems more like let's find the best singer as opposed to find the best pop singer.
Thanks.
Yeah. I don't really think I watched a couple episodes of an old 1988 show with Gary Cole called The Midnight Caller because I just had a hunkering to watch an episode.
The name sounds familiar.
So he was a San Francisco detective that accidentally shoots his partner during a pursuit and an arrest. And he's completely cleared of all wrongdoing, but he's obviously depressed about it. So he ends up kind of getting done being a police officer, but he gets offered a job to work as a radio DJ on a station out in San Francisco, of course, where he is on from midnight to 3 a.m. and it's a talk show format. And he's called The Midnight Caller, name of the show. The TV show, sorry, is called The Midnight Caller because that's, you know, the premise is Gary Cole's character, Jack Killian, who goes by Nighthawk on the radio, is a talk show guy from midnight to 3 a.m. And people call in and talk about crimes or things they should do or things they shouldn't do. Or in like one episode talking about HIV and AIDS, and, you know, killers call in and confess to him on the radio. And during the daytime, he kind of still investigates. He's kind of still works with the police and this and that and everything. And it's definitely not spectacular television by any means. Right. It was on for 67 episodes from 1988 to 1991. But it was more along the lines of like, I remember this show when it was on when I was like 12.
Gotcha.
Let's watch an episode.
Okay.
And it's on, you know, there's several episodes on YouTube. So it's more like, okay, it's kind of neat, but nothing I'd write home about. And the only other thing is I watched the first two episodes of the new Netflix series Beef.
So how is that?
I don't know.
It really looked like a movie when I watched the trailer.
It looked like a movie, not a TV show. 100%. I don't know for sure, honestly. I watched the first episode. Why would I lie? I hate that, honestly. I'm trying to remove that from my vernacular. What's not that? Being honest, but saying honestly, or to tell the truth, or if I'm being honest. Because it's implying that otherwise I lie to you. Or I'm so trustworthy that I really want you to believe what I'm saying, so I'm going to use the word honest to really drive the point home. And I think everyone does it all the time, and I don't think people notice it anymore, but it's my new pet peeve bugging me thing, so I'm trying to stop from saying it. And Kate and I it's one of those How I Met Your Mother moments.
Yep.
Like how I pointed out to the other two operations managers how Brody says phenomenal all the time. That's his favorite, you know, phenomenal, phenomenal, phenomenal. And I pointed that out, and I'm like, you wait to the next meeting. So we're doing the meeting, and it's in person, and he says phenomenal, like within the first 5 minutes of the meeting. And I just go, like, got off. And they both got the reference. And Jessica and Teresa were like, oh, my God. Yeah. OK. He said it once. And then within the next 10 minutes, he said it like two more times. And they're laughing now, like openly laughing. Mm-hmm. Brody doesn't know what everyone's laughing about, but we're just laughing and having a good time.
So two things to up your enjoyment. One, stuff like that, as I'm sure you know, can be even more fun when you tell the person. When you're like, Brody, did you know that you say phenomenal constantly? And then he becomes self conscious. I did that to my boss. She was like, one more thing. And after the third one, I just said, you know, you've said one more thing three times now. And yesterday you said it about 16 times and the day before that. And so now she's like hyper aware of it.
Yeah.
And I love that. The other fun thing, especially with what he says, just every time he goes, phenomenal, just go, ba-ba-da-ba-da.
Phenomenal, ba-ba-da-ba. Yes.
Just you do it under your breath to the other operations managers, or just do it right out loud. He's like, phenomenal, ba-ba-da-ba-da. What was that? I don't know. Just felt like singing. Just had a little ditty in my head. It's been there all day. Thought maybe I could get it out. Oh, that's phenomenal. Ba-ba-da-ba. Just continue the song. Just keep going with the song throughout the day. See how far you can get into it.
So, again, I watched the first two episodes of Beef. And the episodes are like 35 minutes long, maybe, roughly. Mm-hmm. It's hard to watch a little bit because on one hand, the synopsis is kind of, and the trailer was interesting enough that you kind of want to see what happens and where it goes. But on the other hand, for you to be able to empathize with why these two people, why Ali Wong and Steven Yeun are so angry and frustrated, is you have to experience their life. They have to explain it to you of why and how the people around them frustrate them and how they just eat their emotions all the time. And then, you know, it's a struggle to watch because there's so many unlikable characters on the show. And it's like these two people get shit on by everyone around them in their life and they just eat it. And then now they're going to take it out on each other. And now they make it a point to find each other, to take it out on each other.
Okay.
You know what I mean? And so it's there's so many unlikable characters. It's a struggle to watch.
Yeah, it sounds cringy. Like,
but again, it's because they want you to empathize with those two as to why they're behaving the way they're behaving. That's my theory there. So
yeah, absolutely. Because if you just throw into something and you're like, these people hate people and they're going to hate each other and they're fighting. And you're like, wow, they just have rage issues. I don't fucking care.
Right. But the point is, if you're just watching like an hour and a half movie where their rage is constant and they're chasing each other through the whole movie over the course of a day or two or something like that, that's one thing. But when you're watching this series where they're establishing characters and their rage is going up and down and it's been multiple days, so you're almost like, fucking get over it. That was a week ago. Why are you still mad at this person? Like, it's almost pathetic at the same time. So it's kind of a struggle to watch a little bit, but at the same time, I'm kind of interested in where the story goes. So it's not going to be – it's going to be like my wife who is rewatching Murder, She Wrote or watching it all for the first time or whatever. And she can only really watch one episode at a time because it's so hokey. She enjoys it, but it's just so hokey that she can only take one at a time. As opposed to like when she sits down and watches Friends or Gilmore Girls and it's like play. And then if she was awake 24 hours later, she'd be like, stop, it's time for bed. You know what I mean? It's always the same thing with us with watching any number of shows, but I'm just, you know what I mean? It's just,
Some where you can only do one episode at a time and you're like, I'm done. And then there's some where it's like, feed me as much of this as I can.
Right. This is a slow digestion as opposed to, like you said, feed me more.
Yeah.
But otherwise, I just got Mandalorian and Picard.
Yeah, I think that's all that I have left for real this time.
Yeah. Which one do you want to start with?
Let's start with Picard.
But hold on. Which one do you have the least issues with?
Picard.
Let's start with Mandalorian then. Because I was actually going to recommend, let's start with Mandalorian.
So I, again, we've talked about this before. I try to go into everything without reading headlines or spoilers or anything like that. I'm glad that I did in this case, because I feel like all the hate that this episode got online might have colored my perspective of it. Like, I might have gone into it with a different mindset, seeing how many people were like, this sucks, worst episode of the season, worst episode of the show, I hated this, this is awful. Like, I would have been very clouded going into it, and I wouldn't have been able to watch it from my own perspective with my own eyes and come to the same fucking conclusion that this was fucking awful.
What was awful about it?
Well, not the first 5 minutes and not the last 5 to 10 minutes, but the stuff in the middle, the saccharine, ridiculous, we're creating an episode. We have no idea what we're doing, so we're going to create an episode just so that we can have Lizzo and Jack Black and Christopher
Lloyd.
What? I'm trying to
Christopher Lloyd.
Thank you. For some reason, Christopher Plummer was stuck in my head. Ah. And I'm like, it's not Christopher Plummer. Christopher Lloyd. Like, we need to get all of our cameos in as efficiently as possible. It felt like the entire episode, that the middle part there on that planet, was done so that we could see them dressed up in fancy costumes and acting their best in their acting. Like, it was saccharine. It was ridiculous. Everything else this season has been so rooted in the dark, the, you know, moody, the gravity of the situation. And then suddenly we're like, oh, it's time to go to this planet where everybody loves everything. And we're all lazy because we got the droids to do everything for us. And my husband is a reformed imperial officer, and he reprogrammed all the droids himself. And then the one bit of gravity that we have outside of the Mandalorians themselves is Christopher Lloyd's character being a separatist and actually, like, returning us to the idea of the separatists. And, you know, when he said Count Dooku was a visionary, and we've seen the episodes, the animated episodes where they talk about Dooku, and, you know, really made you kind of empathize with him. So they brought us back to the separatists versus just the Empire and the Rebellion and the New Jedi Order and the New Rebellion and blah, blah, blah. So that had a little bit of gravity, but everything else just felt ridiculous. I mean, watching Din kick droids over and over again to figure out which one was malfunctioning was stupid. Yes, I know that they wanted to establish that both Din and Bo have different methods of collecting information, and they have different value that they place on things. Like, for her, she was pissed that he gave the Ugnaughts the time of day, much less sat down with them and engaged with them the way that you're supposed to, like the way that they appreciate being talked to. She was like, why the fuck did you do that? But then he's kicking droids, and she's like, why are you doing this? We could be getting it a better way. So I get that they were trying to show us that here's two people with very different views on things, blah, blah, blah. But I feel like it was lost in the silliness of the episode.
I didn't have any issues with the episode. I thought the beginning and the end obviously told the meat and potatoes of the story, of what the story we were looking for. Yep. I thought the middle was just like, did it help advance the story? For the most part, no. We got a few little snippets out of there. Like you said, we got that we're showing Bo-Katan and Jin how they both handle things differently, and how they can learn from each other. Yep. We have that. We have, like you said, Christopher Lloyd and the Separatists. Okay? I'm watching your cat. It looks like he's going to jump on a bookshelf, or she.
Don't you do that.
She's definitely rearing up to jump.
Treats of the food are up there. Yeah.
Ah, she's see?
All innocent. She's like, oh,
but she was definitely like, you could see it. Like, that hind was shaking a little bit. Those legs are getting down. Like, I'm going to jump any second now.
it's just like a kid who, you know, oh, dad's on a phone call. Now I can act out.
So anyhow, we got the separatist.
Your
part
daughter.
In there. We got the separatist part in there, you know, with Christopher Lloyd's character. But another thing that you didn't touch on, and maybe it's just me, or whatever it is, we got the droid's point of view. I don't ever recall getting the droid's point of view ever. Now, we've established their droids, and depending on the droid, either people love them, or they're just robots, or whatever they are, but the droids have always served a purpose in the Star Wars universe.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
Know? And we finally kind of got the droids' point of view as far as like, hey, we know we exist. And we exist because you, as man or people, whatever, created us. And that's the only reason why we exist is because you've created us. And yes, if you didn't create us, we wouldn't exist, but you only created us to do a job. So if we can't do that job, then we don't exist. And you know what? We want to exist. So yeah, we want to do the job that you want us to do so we can continue to exist.
Yeah.
It's like their one main goal is to survive. But not like... go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, which up until that revelation and the fact that it was Christopher Lloyd, you were more under the impression that, oh, this is going to be a droid rebellion. The droids are rising up and they want to, you know, take over people. They were always evil.
Nope. They were programmed that way. Even these ones that were rising up and rebelling were programmed that way.
Like Jessica Rabbit.
It really does show that the droids only act on their programming. And that they're only mean that they and that they just want to exist and they'll exist by whatever it is they need to do to exist. So I thought that was interesting because we've never seen that.
It is very interesting. But then it also raises the question of all the personality and humanity that you get in droids like BB-8, R2-D2, C-3PO, the one that's in the Jedi Outcast games. Like there are a lot of droids out there who have R5. The one who, you know, told what's his name there where the Mandalorians were, you know, gave him the direction. Like, this is all free will and personality that these droids have. So, you know, I get what you're saying, but it also seems like maybe for that group of droids, they're like, we just want to serve. But it seemed like we've seen plenty of examples of droids who are like, no, I don't want to.
Well, and I don't think it's we just want to serve. I think it's like we don't want to be shut down.
Hmm.
So we'll do what we need to do so we don't get shut down. And if our job is to do this, then that's what we're going to do. Because they all definitely still demonstrated personality, like you said. Hmm. I don't know. I didn't have that big of an issue with the episode. I mean, you're right. It did nothing to advance the story.
We knew, speaking of the story, like the beginning part was kind of cool, you know, watching them board that ship and they're like, it was badass. You know, they're just like, you've got a prince on board. We've been hired. We've been paid a lot of money to bring him back. We outgun you.
Yeah.
Just let us come take him.
Yeah.
And then at the end, we knew, you and I called this way back.
Yeah.
We knew that the Darksaber was going to change hands back to Bo-Katan, and it was going to be on a technicality, or it was going to be on a loophole or something.
Correct.
And that's exactly what it was. The fact that he waited until now to do it.
Rather inconvenient or convenient, if you will. I'm just going to play this card when I can.
It was cool that he did it in front of her people, so they all bore witness to her getting it back. And
hey, it was a great fight between Wolves and Bo-Katan.
Sure was.
You know, and he was like, you shouldn't be challenging me. It's him you should be challenging. Because until you have that dark saber, we're not going to follow you anyways. Oh, well, technically it's hers.
Yep. Yeah, I was captured. This was taken from me. She killed the one that captured me. So the one who beat me in combat, she beat. Doesn't that mean that it's hers? And they're like, yeah.
Yep. Yeah, it does. So he hands it back to her.
Yep. Boom, and then she does the nice pose and credits.
Yeah. So we got two more episodes. All in all, I was not unhappy with it. I will say Bryce Dallas Howard, who directed this episode, has directed some pretty awesome episodes of The Mandalorian and Boba Fett and everything. So it is a little disappointing, but it is what it is.
Again, for me, there were the story beats with the Mandalorians were great. And I mean Bo-Katan's old crew.
Yeah.
But the sandwich in the middle did nothing to advance the story. It really reeked of just placating where they were like, oh, we're going to, you know, give cameos to Lizzo and Jack Black because they're big fans. And we're going to put Christopher Lloyd in here because, you know, of course, it's Christopher Lloyd. We got to find a way to shoehorn him in. And that felt cheap. but it just felt like a, I don't know, like a third grade production of something versus what we've had all season. There was
fair enough.
Too much, and the number of political loopholes that Jack Black and Lizzo kept like throwing at them in order to explain why this was a problem. It's like, well,
yeah,
we're not allowed to have a standing army. Nobody's allowed to have weapons in here. A standing army can never enter our city. But you two, because you're Mandalorians and because Mandalorians have to hold onto their weapons, were allowed to come in here with your weapons. And because you're already in here with your weapons, you could actually do something about this and enforce this. And good God, people. Like, I hate government politics and bureaucracy as it is. I work with it all day, every day. So, yeah, you do too.
Oh yeah.
So yeah, having to sit here and listen to this, I didn't like it. I didn't like the majority of it. Was it the worst episode ever? Maybe. But we've had such a run this season of solid, serious, progressive story development with, yes, there's been some humor, absolutely, but this just seemed goofy. This just seemed like childish.
Fair. Fair. Picard.
Picard. So
Surrender is the name of the episode. Ooh.
So tell me about this, because you wanted to talk about Mandalorian first, so obviously you have some thoughts.
Well, I just thought it was a very simplistic episode, quite frankly. We're still on Titan. You know, Vadic has locked the ship down, if you will. She's going to execute. So it was very formulaic storytelling. Either come surrender yourself or execute one person every 10 minutes until you do of the ship crew or mm-hmm. You know what I mean? The ship
crew. Starting 10 minutes from now.
Yeah, right. You have 10 minutes to get here. I'll execute someone. And then I'll execute someone every 10 minutes after that until you get up here. You know, of the whole flight crew, whatever, you know,
mm-hmm.
from the bridge. Okay, that's been done 100,000 times. Oh, Jack's going to go surrender himself. Again, that's the hero move, but people always stop him and have a reason for him not doing it. In this case, it's because the same reason I always have. Oh, when you surrender, she's just going to kill everyone anyways.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it sucks that maybe one or two people are going to die until we figure out a way to stop them, but she's just going to kill everyone anyways. Oh, let's separate the partition from Data and Lore and let them battle it out so that way, you know, maybe Data will win and then we'll have Data to be able to fix all our problems on the ship right now because they need someone to calculate 900 million blah, blah, blah per second and only Data can do that. Oh, look, Data's losing because that's who Data is. But, oh, no, Data really won in the end. Like, it was just all very formulaic, no surprises, no nothing. Everything just seemed obvious. The good guys won. They got the ship back, and now they got two episodes to – or three episodes, whatever it is. Hold on.
How many is it?
Two episodes to go okay. Save the rest of Starfleet because, you know – even though they've killed Vadic, apparently, I mean, she could be maybe picked up and deliquified.
At her core, she's a liquid being. We've all seen Terminator 2.
Right.
We saw what happened when he got close to the fire.
Right. So she got sucked out into the vacuum of space, her and one of her other henchmen, and then she collided with her own ship, and she broke apart because she froze, and then she broke, and then they blew up the ship, so maybe the heat from the ship could melt her to liquid again, but then she'd freeze again, but maybe someone would collect all her being and then melt her.
But so she space can... is a vacuum, so the explosion would happen, but would there be any heat from it?
That's true, you're right. Space is, you're right. But basically what I'm saying is it was predictable.
But we knew that going into it, too.
Exactly.
You
yes.
talked about it at length last week about how, you know, there's no such thing as imminent peril because, yes, we lost the one bridge crew member.
The one Vulcan bridge crew member that we didn't really know died.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Baldy they didn't even right. Baldy McBalderson, because the two crew members that they had us talk and tell us about, they didn't kill them. They just killed the one we didn't know. So right. Let's attach you to one of these two and then kill someone you don't know. unestablished character. She might as well have been wearing a red shirt for crying out loud.
Yep. I thought it was interesting and convenient for the plot that Jack's power, when he first used it, okay, and I mean first in this episode, so like they're locked in there, the four of them, and he's like, I'm going to project out, and he like kind of projects out past the door and finds like a crew member, and he's like, okay, now I can walk around. So now he's walking around as that crew member, gets shot, and he's like, oh god. But he had to actually like see the guy and lay eyes on him. Then later, when he's like, I can get up to the bridge, he just suddenly is in the guy's head. Like, he's just...
Yeah, and the guy that happens to be the closest to one of the command boards to be able to try to type in Picard's code.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The Data and Lore thing, I personally... Yes, you're right. It was predictable, but I personally love the way that he did it.
No, no. It was brilliantly done. I'll give them credit. But it was just... Yep. There was no... At no point in time did I feel that Data was in peril of Lore winning and taking over. You know?
Absolutely.
You know, Worf showing up at the last moment to kind of save the day. Cool. No surprise there. We did see the cloaked ship coming in. You know, so.
Well, they also did that thing that I hate when they do this, and I know I've mentioned it many times. So. All of the changelings that were on that ship were all holding everybody at gunpoint. Mm-hmm. Then we get the scene of Rafi with the two swords, and suddenly they're all fighting with swords.
Yep.
Did they leave their guns behind? But, you know, we had to have that cool fight scene with the swords. It always brings me back to Indiana Jones. You know, the guy with the wah, 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 and then the gun.
And he shoots him.
Pull the gun out and shoot him. And then later on, they reference it again where he dropped his gun and he couldn't do that. But it's the same kind of thing. Like, these guys all had guns. So she shows up to do her badass sword fighting thing. One of them should have just shot her.
Right. I agree with that. Done. But anyways, so they've got their ship back and only one crew member that we're aware of died. And they've eradicated the rest of
No, there were several, remember, in the hallway when Jack first walked out there.
Yes, but what I mean is on the bridge crew.
Yeah,
the bridge crew. No one that mattered died.
Yeah. Yeah, they were all just random people.
No one that matters to the story died at all.
Yep.
And all the changelings have been killed and then burnt or disintegrated or whatever it is the phasers can do now. And so now essentially we've that story's done, quote unquote. You know, Vadic may show up, who knows, but the essential story now is how is this one lone ship going to stop the changeling infiltration of Starfleet for their heritage day that's coming up? Which, again, you know they will.
Yes. So we have two episodes left. You know that a good portion of the next episode is going to be dedicated to Jack and Deanna walking through the door.
Yes, because that was the big thing at the end of the episode. Yep.
Yeah, she's like, I'll walk through it with you.
Yeah.
So, you know, we're going to get a chunk of that. Also, we still haven't met the big bad.
Right.
So.
And the final episode is called The Last Generation. There's going to be lots of feel-good moments. We're going to love it. Probably get teary-eyed.
Oh, yeah.
I say this like, oh, maybe I know I sound angry watching it. I'm enjoying watching the show. They created this insurmountable odds scenario that I never once felt was insurmountable. And I think
do you remember in the original run of the series when they killed Natasha Yar?
Yes.
And how it shook you? Like, I was shook. They killed a main character on a TV series. Like, they had a funeral and everything.
Yeah, but
gone.
Denise Crosby wanted off the show.
Beyond that, though, it was the fact that there
was... Until Game of Thrones, it was really the first time you really saw any main character on a show kind of be killed, like, that I watched. Because I'm trying to think... And it was so... anticlimactic, too.
Mm. Yeah, it was like that slime monster or something.
Yeah, like it happened right off the beginning of the episode. It just kind of like hit her in the face and down she went.
Yep. But it was still that reinforced that there was the possibility of imminent peril. You know, this was their security officer. This was a main character on the show, and she was snuffed out like that. So,
Anyhow, I'll watch it. I'm excited for it. We'll see what happens.
By the way, this was another thing with this episode. Vadic constantly talking about, you know, Jack, it's time you find out who you really are. Jack, it's time that you understood. Oh, you're starting to feel your powers. Oh, yeah, you're starting to get used to it. She still never said anything. They still never talked about who he is, what he is. Like, you're this far into the game and you still haven't told us. You got two episodes left. Like, that's just poor storytelling, in my opinion. We should have known what he was earlier so that they could have been establishing these powers and that kind of stuff.
Yep, I agree with that. And she obviously was like, don't you want to know what's behind the red door? So she obviously knew what was behind the red door.
Yep.
So. Yep. Well, yeah.
So, is that it for shows?
That's it for shows.
Okay.
I watched a couple movies.
Okay. Go for it.
I'll only talk about two of them in depth. I watched four movies. I watched Army of Darkness, the international edition.
I was just going to say which version.
There's four, I realized. I have all four of them on that Blu-ray set of mine.
Nice.
I watched the international edition, which has the original ending, but it's got some alternate scenes in it that the theatrical and director's cut does not have.
Mm-hmm.
It also has a edited down windmill scene with all the tiny ashes.
Hmm.
I like the extended scene better, I guess.
Okay.
And then I also watched Evil Dead. Not The Evil Dead, but Evil Dead, you know, the Fed Alvarez 2013 unrated
edition.
Which
you still like.
Oh, I love it. I think it's great. Yes, absolutely. Like, it is not Ashley Williams. It's not Bruce Campbell's character. This is a universe in which the book still exists. Maybe it's an alternate universe. Maybe it's a multiverse type thing. Who knows? But the book still exists. They unleash the evil. I watched them all now in preparation for this coming week, or technically next week, of Evil Dead Rise, which is all over the place. I mean, holy cow.
I'm doing my best to avoid it.
Are showing up with trailers, and people go, oh my God, it's so amazing, it's phenomenal, and blah, 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 blah.
Exclusive clip. And
I've avoided all those exclusive clips, but I have heard people saying it's phenomenal, it's fantastic, this and that, blah, blah, blah. I'm very excited for it. Excited for it. Not sure when I'll get to see it, if I'm going to see it opening day Thursday, if I'm going to end up going Friday. It depends, because Kane and I are going to a Red Sox game Thursday at 1:35. So that'll be over. I mean, I could go to an evening showing anywhere between Boston and Maine at any theater if I wanted to stop along the way. Or I might wait till 1 o'clock Friday and go. Who knows? But that's definitely a movie I want to see. Straight away in theaters, because I'm very excited about it.
Yeah. And yeah, we have to see that together, because it's it's Evil Dead, and that's kind of a tradition with us.
Well, exactly. Yes. So I'm most likely leaning towards that Friday evening, because Thursday I'll be going to the Red Sox game in the morning with Kanan. So we should count on that Friday evening then.
Okay.
I know Gio has no interest in going. I don't think Addison's going to want to go, but I'll double check with her. I know Kanan wants to go.
Okay.
That's going to be a new experience for you, going to the R-rated horror movie with my kids, because they're old enough.
Yeah.
So that will definitely be a new thing. Are you going to go see the new Shazam movie in theaters?
Shazam Fury of the Gods?
Yeah.
No. Go hard pass.
Yeah, same here. 7:20, I bet you, would be the time we'd end up going on that day.
That sounds about right for a Friday.
Yeah, let's just see here. Boom, boom, boom. continue. Let's see how much this is gonna. Let's see if that. See how many tickets are available in that theater. And the answer is plenty. Only two tickets have been sold.
That'll change.
Yeah. Oh yeah. But I'll double check with Addison and I'll buy tickets this coming Wednesday.
Cool.
All right. The other movies I watched. Basic. Kanan and I watched that on Thursday night. Do you remember Basic? John Travolta, Samuel L. Jackson?
Nope.
Either did I. Came out in
2003.
I remember.
Came out when?
2003. I mean, 2003. So here's the. There's two reasons why I do remember watching this movie. Because back in 2003, I was a bit addicted to the song Black Betty. Okay.
By Ram Jam?
Yeah, I listened to it quite a bit. And buddy at work, Aaron, you're familiar with Aaron. He and I would joke about that song. That, and I used to say, like, you know what my mom always says? Fuck them if they can't take a joke. I was saying that then. And so I know we watched the movie because John Travolta says that line in the movie. Not what my mom says, but you know what they say? Fuck them if you can't take a joke. And then also Black Betty is played in the closing credits of the movie. So Aaron was like, oh! So I know I watched the movie. Might even watched it together for all I know, him and I.
Okay.
But essentially, it's during a live exercise in the jungles of Panama, a team of Army Ranger trainees is led by the fearsome instructor, Master Sergeant Nathan West. Sergeant Ray Dunbar emerges from the jungle carrying a wounded Second Lieutenant Levi Kendall. The two men are pursued by Sergeant Mueller, whom Dunbar kills in self-defense, although no other bodies are found. West's team is presumed dead. And they bring in John Travolta, who is former Army Ranger, now DEA. His name is Tom Hardy in the movie, by the way. And he's brought in to help the military police investigator try to figure out what happened. And it's got a cast of John Travolta, Connie Nelson, Samuel L. Jackson. Tim Daly plays the colonel of the base. Giovanna Ribisi's in it. Tay Diggs. All kinds of other people. Guys. Harry Connick Jr.'s got a role in it as a doctor. Anyway, so I don't remember anything about it other than I know I had to have watched it. And I remember briefly a couple scenes, but not really. Anyways, in the end, great flick. Well worth your time. It's on HBO Max. Go watch it.
You said it's called Basic?
Basic, yep.
Okay.
It's on HBO Max. Okay. It's worth your time.
Okay.
Yeah. I was genuinely surprised. Even Kanan after said, oh, it was way better than I thought it was going to be. The other movie that we watched, or actually Kate and I watched, was on the old, I think it was on Paramount Plus, I believe, 80 for Brady.
Oh, no interest. How was it?
The movie of the four ladies in their 80s. One's actually only 75. And they just want to go to the Super Bowl to see Tom Brady play. And it's the year when the Patriots had the unbelievable comeback against the Falcons to win the Super Bowl. It was really good. It was a lot different than I thought it was going to be, movie-wise. It was really, really good. I enjoyed the hell out of it. I think what was fun was watching, like, I think you had, like, Jane Fonda, who I believe was 85. Lily Tomlin's, like, 83. Sally Field's 75. And then Gina Moreno. Who's 91?
Wow.
As the four, you know, the four actresses in this movie, the actual Golden Girls, and just kind of watch them do their thing and act and put on a hell of a show and how good they're all moving around, if you will. And story was good, very unbelievable at times, but fun. It was fun.
Thanks.
It was a fun, enjoyable flick.
That's cool.
Yeah.
I'll probably never watch it. You know, I'm not a sports person and
yeah.
It looked like something that people would enjoy, but it did nothing for me when I watched the trailer. So,
well, you know, quite frankly, the sports aspect of it wasn't really the focal point of the whole thing, if you will. You know?
Mm-hmm.
It was more along the lines of how football, specifically Tom Brady, brought these four girls, ladies together, women together, when one of them was in a time of need, and how they kind of became fanatical about it. And then, so yeah, so it was interesting. It was really interesting.
Okay. Well, I'm glad you enjoyed it.
Yeah. It was a lot better than, it was not what I anticipated. But at the same time, if you think about who's in the movie, Jane Fonda, Lily Tomlin, Sally Field, and Maria, they're all amazing actresses. So it's kind of no surprise that they all,
did a great job. They're not the flick. They're not going to go into something and half-ass it.
Well, exactly. Yes. Yeah. So that's it for me for movies.
Okay. So I guess that's just news, trailers, et cetera.
Yeah, news and trailers and whatnot and have you.
I can't hear the word et cetera anymore without thinking of the movie Split. How one of the personalities would always do that, et cetera. Yeah. I'm going to go in the other room now, et cetera. Like, I can't hear it without thinking of him.
That's kind of gross.
Yeah.
All right. Let's go. I'll see here. When did the trailer start? That is a long TikTok. Did you see that? Holy shit.
Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse.
I didn't watch it.
No?
No, I'm not going to.
This was the only one that I will watch. I watched the teaser, which was nothing.
Was enough.
I wanted to have a little bit more. This brought me to tears. I'm so stupidly excited for this movie. It's amazing. The art style of the first one, the story of the first one, like, this was one of those movies that I could just watch on repeat and never get tired of. Always enjoy it, always laugh, always feel, emotional at the right parts. And this one looks like they are absolutely fucking doubling down on that. The humor was spot on. The characters are spot on. There's a mystery. Like, watching the trailer, you're like, what is going on? That this is happening. But yeah, it's the beats that it looks like it's setting up. I'm so fucking excited for this. Like, this is already my movie of the year, hands down. I haven't seen anything else that's coming out or that has come out that is going to come close to touching this. And I don't think that there'll be anything else that can. Like, it's April. It's April 10th, and I cannot predict that there's going to be anything else this year that is going to come close. So, yeah.
Well, I'm not saying that this is going to come close, but I'm going to say I had a similar reaction. So I know I said I wasn't going to watch the Indiana Jones trailer.
Yeah.
I did.
I did not.
And I got all teared up at the end.
Did you?
Oh, yeah. Like, because even the trailer kept just the way they blended the current movie in with, like, kind of the earlier movies. Like, they kept showing, like, clips. Like, they'd show a brief clip from one of the earlier movies, and then how it tied in with kind of currently, or, like, I don't know. It was just brilliantly done. I got all teary-eyed at the end of it, and I'm like, I cannot wait to watch this movie. Is it going to be the best movie of the year? Probably not. Is it going to be the most nostalgia-filled, like, this is what we should have gotten, we should ignore Crystal Skull? Absolutely. So
good. I did, for the same reason that you did with Spider-Verse, I didn't watch it because I'm like, I know I'm going to watch the movie. Like, and I'm excited for that, but definitely not as excited as I am for Spider-Verse. It sounds, though, like it's going to be good based on your reaction.
Oh, no, I'm more excited for the Spider-Verse movie than I am for Indiana Jones. But I'm very excited for Indiana Jones as well.
Nice.
Like, I didn't see Spider-Man the first Across the Universe there in the Across the Spider-Verse in theaters. I saw it on home video. So I'm excited to see this in theaters.
Nice. Yeah. By the way, I don't know if you noticed it, but my jaw just dropped because I saw something come across my feed that said Al Jaffee, the legendary Mad Magazine artist, has just passed away at 102.
Oh, wow.
I didn't realize he was still alive. 102 is amazing. I certainly enjoyed a lot of his work in Mad Magazine growing up.
I thoroughly enjoyed a lot of his work. And I like how it calls him the king of the Mad Foldins.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, just passed away at 102. who? Holy crap.
Damn. I mean, I'm not even upset by that just because he's 102. I mean,
exactly. I'm like, good for him. That I'm not going to be sad or anything. I'm like, dude, maybe you could have cut out a little earlier.
You know, he retired at the age of 99.
Wow. That's fucking insane.
Yeah. Good for him. Yeah.
This week, good for Mike announced.
Yeah, I saw you had you put your hand on your chest almost like, oh my heavens. Yeah.
I was like, holy crap. I wonder
what that's about.
And it was more that he was 102 and that he was still around. I'm like, holy crap.
Well, I think, wasn't it you that was telling me like you did like a 100th birthday for like your grandfather?
Yeah.
And it was a big deal. And then when he was like, oh, you're 101.
We're not going to do this like, every year.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
So this week Mike announced that James Gunn is his man crush.
No, I did not. My buddy sent me that and I copy and pasted what he said, and he's the one that put James Gunn as my man crush. You know it's Ryan Reynolds. So anyways.
Fair enough.
But yeah, he goes, I think there is such a thing as superhero fatigue. I think it doesn't have anything to do with superheroes. It has to do with the kind of stories they get to be told. And if you lose your eye on the ball, which is character. We love Superman. We love Batman. We love Iron Man because they're those incredible characters that we have deep in our hearts. Let's hold on. Did everyone love Iron Man before the Iron Man movie?
No.
That was bandwagon extraordinary jumping on that. But it was so damn good.
Yep.
It becomes just such a bunch of nonsense on screen. It really gets boring. But I get fatigued by most spectacle films, by the grind of not having an emotional grounded story. It doesn't have anything to do with whether the superhero movies or not. If you don't have a story at the base of it, just watching things bash each other, no matter how clever those bashing moments are, no matter how clever those designs in the VFX are, it just getting fatiguing. And I think that's very, very real. So. And then doesn't really lead into it, but I did send you the trailer for Sisu, which is basically about a Finnish guy who's just killing Nazis, like in the most violent ways, most horrifically violent ways. He's just killing Nazis
because he discovered a vein of gold, and the nearest town is what, like, what did it say, like 534 miles away or something?
563 miles away.
Yeah,
so he's trying to bring his gold back, and the Nazis are like, we want your gold. And he's like, I'm going to kill all of you now. So not a great story based on the trailer, but definitely lots of violence. You shared that they might be making a new Shrek movie with the entire cast, and I could care so little about that it doesn't even register on a scale.
Oh, I'm down for it. I think that they definitely ran out of gas in the engine at the end, and they were just throwing anything up on the screen. The first two were fucking gold. The first one especially.
No disagreeing there.
Second one, though, bringing in the Fairy Godmother and Prince Charming. And the second one to this day has one of the best soundtracks. I listen to every song on that soundtrack on repeat forever. Like, the second one just had everything going for it. But yeah, then they ran out of gas, and the third one was ridiculous. The fourth one was just terrible. So if they brought it back now, I would hope that they would basically learn from those mistakes and really make it a legitimate movie. But if they don't, I won't lose sleep.
Oh, I sent you a poster for the Muppets Mayhem. All 10 episodes are coming out on the Disney Plus here on May 10th.
Yep.
It's essentially about Junior A&R executive Nora must deal with the madness caused by Dr. Teeth and Electric Mayhem, who come to face to face with modern musical business as they try to record their first ever platinum album.
Platinum.
So, yep.
Platinum album.
They're shooting for the stars on this one.
Mm-hmm. Platinum.
Yep.
I'll probably check it out.
I will check it out.
It's Muppets, but arguably.
It's okay. My wife dropped a plate. It didn't break. It just made a lot more noise than if it broken, probably.
I assume that was the noise that I heard.
Yes. Yep.
Arguably, the Electric Mayhem was... It sounds bad to say this, but they were probably my least favorite part of the Muppet Show. Like,
except for Animal, they're all background characters.
Exactly. You know, they serve very little purpose other than to play music and occasionally, like, Janet's to go, whoa, man, wow. Animal was the shining light in that. Yep. If they could have gone acoustic and brought Rolf into it, I might have been more interested, but...
Sure.
Then they wouldn't have been the Electric Mayhem. They would have been the Acoustic Mayhem. I sent you the news that Ballerina, the spinoff of John Wick, has officially gotten a release window next summer. That's a ways away.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm excited to see it because it's, you know, in the last movie, we saw the ballerinas being trained. Like, this is not just, oh, what if John Wick but a girl? No, this is legitimate part of the lore. It's a whole different.
I know, but it's also Red Sparrow or it's Black Widow. It's just basically that to me.
It's along those lines, absolutely. But as I said, it's baked into the lore of John Wick. So
right. Yes, it is.
Excuse me.
You sent me that Cruel Intentions, the TV show, may finally be coming to Amazon Freevee. Don't care. Too little, too late.
Yeah, I love the first movie. Everything else beyond that, couldn't care less. And
I don't even know if I love the first movie.
By first movie, I mean the second movie, you know, the Reese Witherspoon and Ryan Phillippe and Sarah Michelle Gellar. Not the first movie, which was Dangerous Liaisons with John Madden.
Donald Glover talking about a Lando Calrissian Star Wars series. Very vague statements. Yeah, it's something we're talking about. Very, that's about it.
Very vague statements.
Maxine. Who? Three X's. Ty West.
All this was a list of the people who are going to be in the movie, which was impressive. It was a cool collection of people, but.
Yeah, it's no footage
or anything.
It's the third film in the trilogy of X and Pearl. Mia Goth played Pearl, old and young, in X. And then we got Pearl, played by Mia Goth. And then now we're getting this Maxine, Triple X, which is Mia Goth's character that survived X and is now apparently still in the adult film industry.
Hmm.
I sent you the trailer for Nefarious. What'd you think of that?
It wasn't bad, but it didn't really do anything for me. Like, I didn't find myself at the end like wanting to look up more on it or like, oh, I can't wait for that to come out. But it also wasn't one of the garbage ones that we send each other where it's like, why the fuck did you send me this?
No, it definitely wasn't. It looks interesting. It looks see if they got a. I mean, I don't know if it was based on anything else. Okay, on the day of his scheduled execution, a convicted serial killer gets a psychiatric evaluation during which he claims he is a demon. And further claims that before their time is over, the psychiatrist will commit three murders of his own.
Yep.
Sean Patrick Flannery, James Healy Jr. It's not a huge cast, but the story seems cool. The trailer looks cool. I mean, I'd definitely check it out. I sent you the concept artwork poster for the new Indiana Jones film.
Solid. Definitely got a solid to it.
Awesome retro look. And then you sent me a bunch of Star Wars stuff.
They were doing a Star Wars celebration, and there's even a couple of things that didn't make it to the patch that I sent you. Like, they have officially gone on the record as saying that Obi-Wan Season 2 is not in production. They are not actively moving forward on a Season 2.
Okay.
Doesn't mean that they're never going to do it.
just means they're not right now.
They're not actively working on it.
Okay, fair enough.
But yeah, so starting at the top, they said there's going to be three more Star Wars movies coming out soon. One of them is going to be Daisy Ridley's Rey, rebuilding the Jedi Order.
I think was it 15 years after Rise of Skywalker?
Yep. And sure that a collection of fanboys out there started foaming at the mouth and screaming and, you know, throwing every anti.
Well, because they want us to completely ignore those three movies.
Yeah, yeah. And they don't want a female lead and blah, blah, blah. So
I just say, fuck those fucking fucks. Don't watch it then.
I agree. Fuck those fucking fucks. So, yeah. And then there's two other movies, which later on we found out that I don't know if it's one of those three or if it's just separate. But we are getting a crossover movie that is going to tie in the Ahsoka series and The Mandalorian and the Book of Boba Fett, you know, all these live action series that they're doing, Ghost Crew, and they're going to all tie together in a movie.
I don't think that's one of the three movies, because I believe I read one of the three movies was the Daisy Ridley movie, and then one, a movie that was going to take place before, like, before all the movies that we know.
Yeah. In the Old Republic era or the High Republic era.
So. Right, right. And hold on. James Mangold's movie will go back to the Dawn of the Jedi, while Dave Filoni's movie will focus on the New Republic. Oh, okay, and close out the interconnected stories told in The Mandalorian, The Book of Boba Fett, Ahsoka, and other Disney Plus series.
There you go.
And then the Rey movie that takes place as Rey tries to build. So I guess that is the third movie, is the Mandalorian movie.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Which makes sense, because Dave Filoni is the one that's responsible, essentially, for Mandalorian and Ahsoka. So him doing that movie that ties them all together. That makes sense.
Yep.
Now, I wonder if that's going to be a Disney Plus movie or a theater movie.
That's a good question. And I don't know.
So
we got news about The Acolyte. And the big headline that everybody was banking on over and over again was Star Wars The Acolyte is Frozen meets Kill Bill. Okay.
Okay.
But, like, if you just gave me that, I've got nothing to go on.
I would have no idea what the hell that movie's about.
Frozen is the story of Elsa trying to find her way, basically trying to come to grips with the power that's inside of her, and isolating herself from everybody else because she feels that she's a danger, blah, 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 while her sister is trying to, you know, bring her back around and warm her icy heart, I guess. And then Kill Bill is a fucking revenge movie. It's somebody who was wronged and left for dead and is going after all the people who wronged her.
Yep.
Those are very different things.
Very, very different. And Kill Bill, the bride, is an assassin going after other assassins.
Yeah.
And Frozen is a princess trying to find her. Like you said, you described it better. I've never seen it other than there's a song called Let It Go, which obviously they know.
Yep. Yep. This one's The Acolyte is going to take place in the High Republic era, which is before any of the movies that we've seen so far. The only synopsis that I can see here is takes viewers into a galaxy of shadowy secrets and emerging dark side powers in the final days of the High Republic era. Okay. It's a TV series. It'll probably be good, I'm assuming, but I don't know enough about it to care. And I really, again, I hate that description. It's Frozen meets Kill Bill. In what way?
I'm not a big fan of it either.
Like, explain yourself right now.
Yeah.
Anywho. what else we got here? Andor season 2 will be next summer. That's a long time to wait. That's August of next year. So we got like a year and a half to go.
Yeah, 16 before we months. Get
season two of Andor.
Yeah. Obviously, with the new movies and everything else like that, they're expanding the timeline.
Yep. Yep.
We got the Ahsoka teaser trailer. Looks great.
It does look great. And it had a lot of people. We forgot to mention this, by the way. Two episodes ago on Mandalorian, we had Jax, was it? From Star Wars Rebels. One of the characters, he was in the bar talking to the X-Wing pilot. And he was like, oh, geez, I don't know. he's from Rebels. Now we basically get the Ahsoka trailer, which is a who's who from Rebels. You've got Admiral Thrawn, who's actually going to be live action on there.
Yep.
You've got Ahsoka. We had already kind of heard about Ezra earlier in The Mandalorian. That's her quest, is to look for him. But you have Sabine, and Sabine, like, older, wiser, long hair, looking really good. Mary Elizabeth Winstead is going to be playing Hera, the leader, the pilot. We've got two new Sith who look pretty badass.
Yep.
They've confirmed that one of the droids on there is going to be voiced by David Tennant in a regular recurring role. So that's pretty badass.
Excellent.
This looked great. This looked like another high quality show in this universe. And then to find out that they're taking all of those high quality shows and merging them, or collectively doing a movie to tie them all together. That's awesome.
Yep.
They're already kind of tied together, though. We've already seen Ahsoka. We've already seen Boba.
But it's the same thing like they did with the Netflix Marvel shows. And then we got the Defenders movie.
Yeah.
So.
Ant-Man might not be on Disney Plus for a while.
Yep. Is what it is.
It's like May 18th. It's coming to digital only.
April 18th or something.
April 18th. Sorry. Yeah.
And then on home video, like May 15th or something like that.
Yeah.
So.
And then earlier today, we got the trailer for Star Wars Visions Volume 2.
Cool. I'll watch that.
Yep. And I think that was it for the stuff that has been sent this week. I know there's more rolling in now, but that can wait till next week.
What's rolling in now? Because next week, I don't know if I'll be able to record.
Well, this one is Netflix is making an animated Stranger Things spinoff. Yep.
Oh, they can control the age of the people.
It says, we've always dreamed of an animated Stranger Things in the vein of the Saturday morning cartoons that we grew up loving. And to see this dream realized has been absolutely thrilling, the Duffer Brothers said. We couldn't be more blown away by what Eric Robles and his team have come up with. The scripts, the artwork are incredible. We can't wait to share more with you. The adventure continues.
Okay.
In the vein of a Saturday morning 80s cartoon? Shit, yeah. That worked for me.
Absolutely.
Let's see what else we got here. A couple of things popped in while we were talking.
Yeah, next weekend, I'm going to Connecticut on Saturday, Philadelphia on Sunday, and I'll be in Boston on Monday morning. And then I'll be home late afternoon Monday. Not 100% sure what time yet. So I'm not 100% sure if I'll make it to recording at 6 or not.
Okay. Apparently, the Marvels is coming out in November. We know that. Mm-hmm. Hold on. They just said this. Apparently, Marvel will release a clip online on April 11th.
Oh, tomorrow.
Yeah. I think it's going to be a teaser clip, but...
Probably. Yep. No, that works.
Yep. Let's see. Some of these are articles that I looked at because they were video game things. Oh, you'll be interested to see that the world's largest Donkey Kong arcade game is opening this summer. The Strong Museum of Play has announced that it's building the world's largest playable Donkey Kong arcade game. It will stand nearly 20 feet tall and was built with input from Nintendo of America. It's notable for featuring the first appearance of Mario, and as well as the original Donkey Kong.
playable cabinet will
Rochester,
be part of
Rochester, New York. Ooh, when's that? I'm going to be in Rochester, New York this summer.
June 30th.
Until when?
I don't know. Just as part of our June 30th expansion, the Strong will create the world's largest playable, 20 feet. Yeah, so it doesn't give specifics there, but.
Well, that's going on the list then, damn it. Because my wife and I, we're going to Niagara Falls.
Yep.
There it is, the ultimate play destination. Nice. Yeah, we're going to the Niagara Falls in June. July, nice. 10th anniversary is in June, so we're going in July when Wesley's at day camp, at summer camp. And so we're going to go over to Niagara Falls, Canada, do that, and then we're going to work our way back across. And we'll be going through Rochester on the way back, and seems like that's a great place to stop at because they got exhibits. They have the National mm-hmm. Toy Hall of Fame.
Nice.
Nice. Baseway Arcade. 100 Years of Madame Alexander. That looks like Kate's Madeline doll. That's cool. Nice. Let's see here. Material Girl. Wegmans Super Kids Market. I don't know what that means, but all right.
Wait a minute. Hold on. You said Material Girl and it reminded me of something.
Pinball Playfields? Immerse yourself in pinball machines? Peanuts and Play Display, Imagination Destination, Field of Play, Game Time, E-Game Revolution. They got a Sesame Street display with actual Sesame Street. What?
So apparently I didn't send this to you, but this week we got an official full trailer for the Barbie movie.
I'm good.
It definitely has a lot of adult humor in it, and it looks yep. like some of the set design is really well done. I'm still good with it, but you know, seeing Simu Liu talking to Ryan Gosling as they're both Kens and talking about, you know, how you don't deserve to be on this beach. I'm going to beach off you. It's a beach off. Yeah, I'll beach off anybody who tries to take this beach from me. Lots of adult humor seems to be in this. This doesn't seem to be a kids movie, but maybe, you know, maybe it's one of those like that skates the line. Yeah, but no, I'm not going to go check it out.
This costs $19 to get into the Museum of Play, and I'm doing it.
Thanks.
National Toy Hall of Fame.
Yeah, that's right up your alley, dude.
It is. Recent inductees into the National the top. Light Bright, Masters of the Universe. Nice. Mm. Nice. Nice. It's going on the list. Ha ha. Anyhow. Well, I'll be checking out that world's largest Donkey Kong game as well.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I'm on Twitter. I'm Superstar Mel.
I am the Quantum Geek, G33K.
That's our show.
We'll talk to you next week.